Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. You want again.
Steve, are you there?
I am here.
Okay. I don't know what happened. I hope there's nothing wrong with Blog Talk. But anyway, all right, listen. I'm glad you're here, and I'm glad Bill was able to get in touch with you at such short notice. And so anyway, I'm really happy about that. What I'm going to do is I'm going to read the mission statement, because I do that, and then I'm going to introduce you. I can hear the song in the background. I don't know what's wrong. All right, well, it doesn't matter. It's not the song we'll hear about tonight, although it says a lot of good things. We have tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we have tonight Steve, how did you say that? McAvoy? Say it again.
McAvoy,
that's it. Okay, McBoy. And he's from Covington, Louisiana, who was first abused by a summer school teacher in summer between 5th and 6th grade. His predator was a member of the clergy, a deacon. So he was encouraged to be trained as an altar boy by this man who sometimes molested him as other students watched. Now, I'm not going to read any more than that because this is quite a story. I can see this. I've never heard your story before. I'm really happy that you're here. So let me get the NASCA business out of the way, and then we'll get to your story. And the telephone number here is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. I'm Carol Levine. I am Vice President of NASCA. And so tonight we do have Steve on, and I'm going to get back to him. First of all, let me read about the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse, and that is the mission statement. We have a signalness of purpose at NASCA, and that is to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect, and we do so two different ways. Number one is educating the public, especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse. Presenting the facts to show child abuse to be a pandemic, worldwide problem that affects everyone. Number two is offering hope for healing through numerous paths and providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. So often we speak about prevention, intervention, and recovery because that's really what we're about. But I always zero in on the prevention because I feel if society is much more aware of child abuse and how it affects them also, it seems like it has to be something like that, then maybe they take more of an interest and they'd help more. And this is why I've been on this show for 11, 12 years now. And quite frankly, I'm an author, and I'm a survivor. Most of us are survivors. Our guest tonight is a survivor. And we certainly know the ins and outs of child abuse, sexual, physical, mental, emotional, and neglect. I've been on many shows before. I've been in newspapers, all kinds of stuff. I must say that since I wrote my book in 2008, was the first time I read it, a trailer was made. And during those times, Steve, they considered my book to be too volatile. They didn't want to deal with it. And so Author House picked me up. And from that time forth, the books are now plentiful. As you can see on Amazon, there's a lot of books about child abuse. There's also books for children so that parents can teach them, you know, about child abuse. And what to look for, the signs, the good, the bad, and the ugly, as I like to call it, okay? Because quite frankly, there's pedophiles out there all over the place. Pedophiles go where children go. It's as simple as that, okay? And it's also very unfortunate. So getting that out of the way, I want to also tell you our website and then bring on our guests. And our website is NASCA, NASCA.org. That's NASCA.org. If you go to our website, get to know it, and you'll find out a lot of your questions being answered right there. It's a very good website, and I, for one, am pretty proud of it. Okay, so, again, the telephone number here is 646-595-2118. So, Steve, why don't you start by telling us your earliest remembrance of, you know, what happened to you, and start your story. Go ahead.
I appreciate that. You know, I was an altar boy at one Catholic church, and in the summer of 1976, my parents moved to a new area. So we were going to have to switch churches and schools. And, you know, my mom said, well, you're going to have to go, I want you to go to a summer school class. I was not ordered by the school or anything. My mom said, I want you to go to make sure you're up to speed with this school and know what's going on. And my teacher was Deacon George Brignac. And he immediately attached himself to me because I was a new kid in the school and proceeded to, you know, literally bring me into his little realm of people he was abusing within the school. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, the 12-year-old was terrifying. And that was my first 3 months of being affiliated with a new school.
Well, this is horrifying here because, yeah, it says that at one time the other students were watching, too. We'll get to that.
I have signed affidavits by other students of me being assaulted in class, sexually assaulted in class. And, you know, that's what it took, that's why it took me so long to even say anything, because everybody knew, you know, in my opinion, all the teachers knew. And, you know, it was, you know, the shame that comes upon you at that age of life is so difficult. You know, and by the time, you know, I was 13, I started drinking. You know, I mean, that was, you know, that went on from July of 76 until, they removed him from the school in December of 76. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that was a difficult time, even being around them, you know, losing all faith. I lost total faith in the whole school and in the church system. Mm-hmm. It was a terrifying situation of not knowing which way to go, being raised in a Catholic family.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It would be, because, you know, in those days, I'm older than you, and Bill and I are both older than you, but way back when, the priests were looked at like they were God people, okay? I mean, I remember that. And even the nuns, I remember one time as a little girl, I touched the habit on the nun, because I wanted to see what it looked strange. It looked like cardboard, and I was just a little kid, and I didn't know, you know. So I touched her habit, and oh my, I got so yelled at like I committed a cardinal sin, okay? You know, whoa.
You did.
You know, yeah.
You did.
Well, oh, I did, yeah. So, you know, it's
that's,
just
that's the way we were taught and raised.
That's,
you know,
right.
you never
right.
would confront a priest, a deacon, a nun, or anything of that nature, because when you went home, you were gonna get it worse.
Yeah.
You know, you were
you
raised
know, it's
that they
right.
were the next thing to God.
Right. Exactly. And you know what? That's just so unreal. That's just so wrong. You see, if nuns, or if it's not the Catholic religion, but other religions, if all religions, you know, would just relax and be genuine with kids, and certainly not, you know, be perpetrators of any sort, then children would, you know, would look up and have a good feeling about religion. But there's so many times when, you know, kids, you know, have been abused, and it's not just in the Catholic faith. It's in all the faiths. And, again, pedophiles go where children go. And where else better, like with the altar boys. Oh.
You know, it's, you know, you say that, and I live, you know, I live in a very, very tough situation because most of my family is very religious.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say that, you know, none of them anymore are affiliated with the Catholic Church. They're
mm-hmm.
all with different religions now, you know, and they were all raised in a different atmosphere than I was raised.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as their kids, you know, all my nieces and nephews were raised in a totally different situation than I was raised.
Mm-hmm.
And to look at the point of, you know, yes, you can blame every religious organization out there that has some type of pedophile within it. We had no religious organization out there except for the Catholic Church that protected pedophiles.
Well, you know, there's I do, but I want to say something with that. I found that just recently with the people that come to your door, what do you call them? And they give you information. That religion. Yes. They do that. They behave the same way in their organization as far as, like, if someone gets caught, say, I see a priest, or one, and it wouldn't be a priest with them, one of their people gets caught molesting a child or raping a child, or it comes forth that there's been a problem. They say, let us handle it. We'll get our people. And that's what's happening, of course, in the Catholic religion, too. It'll go just so far, the investigation, and then they want to get in their people. And for so long, they just simply took that priest and relocated him. Okay, we know this. He would simply go to another church. That's it. And a lot of times things didn't happen. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you're talking about the man who raped and abused me, you know, on file, he only has 25 victims.
Mm-hmm.
On file.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how many true victims does he have? You know, we've discussed this. He probably has almost 50. Because
yeah.
I know of people that have been paid off to shut up.
Sure.
And they won't even talk to me anymore.
Well, that happens, you know. A lot of times, whether it be, you know, with what you're speaking about or other things in courtrooms, and I know a judge was paid off with something that I took to court. It had nothing to do with sexual abuse. And saw it right before my eyes. And, I mean, that happens. It happens. And that's why our justice system is just so, I consider it so terribly corrupt. You know, family court, regular courts, and all this other. And, yeah, people do get paid off. Attorneys get paid off. Prosecutors get paid off. Judges get paid off. And, you know, until the corruption in the system itself stops, and I don't know if that'll ever happen. People like you're speaking about, no, I don't think it's going to either. But, you know, like what you're talking about, it's going to continue to happen. And it's terrible. So you said you started drinking at a... Go ahead.
Go ahead. I started drinking at a very young age. I started stealing alcohol from my parents' house at the age of 13. And that was just to get through the, you know, the nightmares and everything else, and having to be around other students that knew what had happened. And it was just terrible, you know, and, you know, that started my path into complete alcohol addiction. You know, by the time I had graduated high school, I was a full alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
I drank, you know, morning. As soon as I got out of school, I was drinking, and I drank through the night.
Mm-hmm.
And thank God, or thank whoever. I never went through with suicide because of one statement. And that statement was a person who told me, remember, if you ever commit suicide, you'll be the murderer of your mom and dad's son, your brothers and sisters' brother, and if you ever have kids, you'd be the murderer of your children's dad. And that stuck with me a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I held that within me for a very, very long time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and my parents, bless them, because they came to my aid when I was in my early 20s and forced me to get help for my alcoholism. What never came out was my child sexual abuse. You know, I went in and I got sober, and I stayed sober for 15 years and did very well, you know, in my 30s. I started drinking lightly again, occasionally, and no issues. When I came back to Louisiana, and you're talking 22 years later, you know, I had left Louisiana where, you know, I couldn't take it here anymore. What is one of the first things I see on TV is the man who abused me in school.
Mm-hmm.
And his picture on TV and other people talking about him. And I fell apart. And I went back to literally being in my young teens and heavily drinking and wanting to commit suicide again. And thank goodness I had you know, my wife, who, you know, we had been together since 1982. We started dating in 82. And I walked in her door, drunk as could be at 10 o'clock in the morning, and I said, look, either you better get me to the hospital or I'm going to kill myself. And that's when I first time I went and got treatment for being abused as a child. That was 43 years. And people don't realize how you put things into the back of your mind, how tragic they may ever be. You put them away with alcohol, some people with drugs, and you never want to see them again. And it's, you know, it's okay. It's okay to come out and say, hey, this wasn't my fault. It's okay to ask for help. It's okay to step forward and say, I did not cause this.
Well, you didn't.
And no.
No.
And, it, you know, this is what it comes down to, you know, and that realization finally set in when I came out and started telling everybody, and telling everybody in my family was so hard. As I broke down in tears, you know, it was worse than being an alcoholic. It was not knowing how they were going to react that I was sexually abused as a child. And that's where the shame and guilt comes from that none of us should carry. It's not anything we should carry.
Well, you know, I think 90% people, you know, I'm just throwing this out here, you know, have shame and guilt and feelings of a lot. I never did, to be honest with you, Steve. I don't know why, but I always knew that it was wrong. And my abuse started when I was 6, okay, with the sexual abuse. I, too, started drinking when I was 13 because I had terrible panic attacks. And my panic attacks turned into panic disorder. And that's when it's ruling your life. I mean, ruling it. And with school, you know, and everything else. I couldn't stand people looking at me or anything. It was just awful. So I started, just like you did, I went into my mother and stepfather's, where they kept the booze. And I started drinking right from the bottle. And, of course, I did what other kids did. I filled it up with water then, didn't I? So they wouldn't they wouldn't see that it was missing. Well, they had a party one night, and everyone was complaining about the alcohol, that it tasted funny. Well, it sure did, because I'd put a lot of water in it. So, you see, I started drinking when I was 13, and you know, it's something that I continued to do for many years, off and on. I didn't drink when I was pregnant with my children. I didn't drink, or I didn't even smoke cigarettes. I stopped. And but then the minute, you know, that was over with, the pregnancy, out came the cigarettes and out came the booze. And my husband, the children's father, he was an alcoholic. And he never stopped, and he was abusive. So, you know, then I found out later on, much, much later on through the grapevine, that he had been sexually abused at the age of 11. never told me. So you're seeing kids a lot of times they don't tell, or they're selective who they're going to tell, you know. People in general are selective. And, you know, when you're an alcoholic, and I'm one too, it's just that I was situational. And then I had to go cold turkey because I couldn't just, you know, I couldn't, you know, have 5 beers here, 10 beers there, and all this. I had to stop, period. My fingers started to bloat, my kidneys started to pound, and I said, no more. So I quit. I didn't know if I was going to have seizures or not. Had no idea. But the point is we have, you know, problems with relationships and all kinds of things. Because, you know, we have issues. So when you were in school...
It's amazing when you say that.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, what I was going to ask you is, I mean, these kids, I don't know how many saw, you know, these actions, you being molested. That must have been terribly, terribly humiliating and frightening. Did you have friends in school?
For the 2 years I was there, very little friends. It was a very small amount. Most of them were girls, because, you know, we were primarily separated, and so the girls never really knew. It was difficult because, you know, I was very athletic, and trying to get along with the guys didn't work. So when I had the opportunity in my eighth grade year to leave that school and go to another school, which was pre-high school, which was permitted in, you know, in the state of Louisiana, you know, I left that school and went to another school. But it was a Catholic school also, and I you know, my sophomore year, I couldn't take it. I left. I walked in the door and told my parents I can't stay here anymore. And I went to a public school. You know,
how'd that work for you?
But, you know, that was fine. I had, my friendship grew beyond belief.
That's good.
I had, you know, a change of things that could never, I could never imagine. And it's funny, I'm sorry, that, you know, you brought this up because I talked to a girl I dated as a freshman in high school when I got back to Louisiana. Someone I hadn't talked to since 1981. And, you know, we had, you know, a two-hour conversation. And she said, whatever happened to you? And I told her my story. She goes, it's so amazing that you have the courage to tell people like that, because I've never told anybody that I was, you know, sexually assaulted by my dad. And I feel so relieved. And you have my story in front of you, correct?
What was that? I didn't hear you.
You have my story in front of you?
Oh, yeah. No, I absolutely do.
Okay. When I posted that story, the nanny who helped raise my children called me up and came out that, you know, she was sexually abused as a teenager. She was gang raped.
Oh,
and
boy.
It never told anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I realized I need my story to be out there. I need others to hear it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
There's help, and there are others out there. You're not alone. You're not alone. And that's what I'm trying to do now. You know, I have no problem talking about what I went through because I wanted to let everybody else know they're not alone.
Mm-hmm. That's right. You know, so often people do feel like they're alone and they think that their story is unique. And our stories are never the same. And our stories, I mean, you know, there are many, many people, of course we know this today, that were sexually abused by priests. We know this. And also, too, nuns. They're starting to investigate that.
Correct.
There's not as many. There's not as many, all right? But they
do
exist.
I've got numerous people.
Mm-hmm.
I've got numerous girls that have come forward to me about being sexually assaulted by nuns.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and I have numerous contacts that I send them to. You know, that, you know, assist in this. You know, we're not alone. There's a huge group of us out here that are, you know, wanting everybody to know it's okay. You're not alone.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we'll stand by, we'll stand right next to you and tell you you're not alone.
Mm-hmm.
And I never realized that until I went into, you know, a psychiatric ward. And no one else there had been abused by priests
mm-hmm.
or, you know, been sexually abused. But they all had a story. And I became more and more aware that everybody's story is different, but in some way or another, one way or another, we've been abused.
Right. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well,
you know,
that's
and
what
you,
we cover.
You were talking.
Yeah. Go ahead.
You
Go
were
ahead.
Talking about
you
your husband. Talking.
Yeah.
You were talking about your husband,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it wasn't until my wife learned that I was sexually abused that she talked about the physical abuse she had from her family
mm-hmm.
to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, it, you know, alcoholics, addicts and abuse victims attract to each other because we protect each other.
Yeah. There's a connection. A common thread.
We may not know it,
like,
but we do. Yes.
Yeah. We're like magnets. It's true. It's very true. And you know what? Until we realize this, we choose wrong partners. And a lot of times those partners we find out, maybe in the course of the, you know, the get-together that you have, whether you're friends or whether you're lovers or whatever you are, the relationship, sometimes it takes a long time to realize the other person was, you know, abused and finally you'll find this out. Maybe they will confide in you. And it doesn't help your relationship any. People have to get help. They just simply do. Because if they don't, they have all kinds of, you know, PTSD And when you're abused such as you are, you could have had complex PTSD. I had complex PTSD.
I do.
Because it, yeah.
I do.
I had it, yeah. And you know, the more it happens, the harder it is to cure. And one time is too many, don't get me wrong. But all the many, 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 many times that that I had it, or, you know, been abused, and the people and the situations, that's where the complex PTSD comes in, and it's harder to, you know, to heal from that. But there is life
it's very difficult.
You know, abuse. Yes. Yes. It's very difficult. Are you going to AA today or anything? Are you doing that?
No. I can't deal with AA anymore.
Okay.
And I'll flat out tell you. It's because they have the statement of God into there. And I lost all faith. I couldn't attend. In the last 2 years, I could not attend a funeral and two weddings because I could not walk into the church.
Uh-huh.
And it's destroyed my faith. The only thing that's restored my faith is the people that I have communication with that have been abused in the organizations. You know, I deal with SNAP a lot. I deal with SCSA org a lot. And, you know, it's a constant battle with faith. And to go walk into a church is terrifies me. You know, maybe one day I'll get over that. I don't know. But, you know, the church is still hiding everything. The archdiocese is hiding everything. We're going to be transparent, according to them, but nothing's coming forward. We're going to file for bankruptcy. That's a, you know, and that's a really good talking point.
Mm-hmm.
The church gets to file for bankruptcy and hide every document about child sexual abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me any other person, company, or anything that's been able to file for bankruptcy in order to hide all their documents?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a matter of corruption. Of course, we know this, all right? Like with the Boy Scouts, they found a tremendous amount of paperwork. We didn't have computers back then. And they found a tremendous amount of files and paperwork and so forth were names from many years ago where, you know, they were people that, you know, had abused, you know, the boys, the Boy Scouts. And it's like they protect each other, right? And now it's a little bit different. I mean, people are, for goodness sake, you have SNAP and you do have other organizations. You know, that are working to help make a difference. I put it that way, help make a difference. I don't know how long it's going to take. I can't tell you. But at least there is public awareness now. I think that when people commit crimes, whatever the crime might be, if it's public, it's out there, the name is out there, I think that's a good thing. And when it's an organization, look what happened at Penn State over in PA. Now, it was with the teachers.
Exactly.
And so forth, you know. So I think it was very good that it got as much, you know, attention as it did, because people have to learn. They have to know. They have to know about these things. you know, that it exists in schools. We tell kids to go to school and tell your teacher. Sometimes it's a good idea, sometimes it's not. You know, but they are all mandated reporters, aren't they? And some do their jobs and others don't. So it's like a toss of the coin. You don't know what's going to happen. But certainly when the offenses are happening at home, might happen both inside and outside of the home. But where do you turn to? You know, it's a very rough thing. Today we do have organizations that kids can get a hold of if they choose to. A lot of times they're too scared. We have the Guardian Angels, and we have Crime Watch. We have Neighborhood Watch. Now, the Guardian Angels are more kid-friendly, I believe anyway, because I've seen them in action. And a child might feel more comfortable going to them. Or maybe somebody else in the family, but that's not too often going to happen because that could, you know, start World War III, which might happen anyway, huh? I don't know the way things are going. But, you know, kids are frightened. That's why they don't tell. That's why most of them don't tell. Because if it's in the family, they don't want to destroy the family. If it's someone outside of the family, but a friend of the family, you know, that causes problems. If it's a stranger, even if it's a stranger, a lot of times kids don't want to tell. So if children don't tell, and this is why we talk so much about parents sitting down with their children at home at a certain age, and you'll know pretty much when that age is because they'll start asking you questions too. You know, to talk to them about what's proper, appropriate behavior from an adult or an older sibling or an older kid down the street. Teach them and let them know, you know, that you're there for them if something bad happens, that you will believe them, you will help them. If there was more of that going on, I think that would help put that dent in the stats, okay, of child abuse when it comes to sexual child abuse.
You know, when you say things like that, you know, there are a lot of people out there that don't believe it's going on. There are a tremendous amount of adults
mm-hmm.
that do not watch out for their children.
Yeah.
I never at any point, and I was told by numerous people, you're way overprotective of your kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and no one ever knew what was going on in the back of my mind.
Mm-hmm.
But I was told I was way overprotective.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter,
you tend to be.
My teenage
yeah.
daughter,
mm-hmm.
disappeared one night. And I, you know, something told me to get up and go check on her room, and she was gone.
Mm-hmm.
And I got in my truck, and I went out, and I searched. And I made phone calls, waking people up to find out who this boy was she wanted to date.
Mm-hmm.
And I went and beat on his parents' door looking for my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the police found her, you know, with a friend 2 hours later. Because I knew who she was with, and, you know, it's amazing what parents don't know about what their kids will tell them and won't tell them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so scary, and it's so hard when one of them gets hurt or abused, and you hear it on the news, and they want to blame not only the perpetrator, but the victim. But there's no awareness that was brought about, you know, before that. Mom and dads need to be talking about this.
Well, I think that kids can sense, you know, like with their parents. They know what their relationship is already with their parents. And if they're close to their parents, I think they're, you know, they might have more of a chance of telling them certain things, you know, about other people's behavior.
No, you're wrong on that.
Why do you say that?
You're wrong on that.
Go ahead. Why do you say that?
Because sexual assault is something you will never want to go tell your parents about. And I don't care what type of sense you get. Sexual assault is something that you will not go to your parents. My daughter did not come to me and tell me that her boyfriend had beat her. I didn't find out till 3 years later. And I found out in a private conversation, do not ever assume. You know, because you know what assume means, right?
Hey, make an ass out of you or me.
Yep.
I learned that years ago. Well, the only thing I can say is what parents can't
do
is
assume.
Sit down. You know, have that talk.
Yes, exactly.
Have that
talk beforehand.
Right. And then the kids will...
way ahead of time.
Exactly. And then there's a bond that happens between parent and child. I didn't have that. And finally, when I did tell my mother about my brother, she didn't care. She said, that happens in families. That was the end of that. And I'd already been sexually abused so many times before that. It was ridiculous. So I started running away, and I was suicidal, too. I tried.
And that's the worst part. That's the worst part. You know, I'll agree with you that, you know, being suicidal, you know, at the age of 18, trying to figure out how you're going to kill yourself and make it look like an accident, you know, is a terrible thought. And, you know, I did that for a long time. And, sorry, someone's trying to dial in. You know, but I did that for a long time of trying to figure out how I was going to kill myself and make it look like an accident. You know, and... that's not a fun memory, you know, that's not a good memory. That is a memory of, you know, living in hell. And what I want, you know, my main thing is to everybody out there, please, please ask for help. We're coming up to one of the worst times of the year.
That's right.
For suicide victims, because it all involves family, and believe me, your family's going to support you. So come forward, ask for help. You don't have to ask your family for help. Ask us for help. We'll always be there. But don't kill yourself. Don't kill yourself for any reason. I've been there, and I'm so glad I'm still here that I didn't kill myself, and you didn't kill yourself.
Oh, I'm in the process of it.
There's so many of us What's that?
I was in the process of it. I got.
I'm sorry. Oh, yeah.
I was in the process. My mother was on one side saying, do it and do it right. And my stepfather was on the other side going, yeah, yeah. He was from Denmark. And a friend of mine came into the house. She lived with us. And she went running upstairs because her date went bad. Her date went bad. And it's a good thing. I say today it's a good thing, but not back then. She came into the room and saw what I was doing and yanked me by my long blonde hair, which was very heavily peroxide at the time. And she pulled me out of the house. You know, now, that, my
well,
I was continuing to cut. I didn't care anymore. You see, if you're going to do it, you don't just sit and have these suicidal ideations. You actually go through with it. I've worked in places. I've learned that. And I certainly meant it. I certainly meant it, especially when the two people who are supposed to nurture you and love you are standing there telling you to do it and do it right. Wow.
You see, I think I was doing it, but mine was through alcohol.
Yeah, that's another way of killing yourself. You're right. You end up with what brain?
You know, mine was
liver.
Through alcohol because I was drinking a case of beer a day on minimum.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I was driving drunk constantly. I went to the mm-hmm. hospital because I went to the restroom and completely had blood coming out of, you know, my bottom.
You were urinating. You're urinating blood.
Mm-hmm. No. No.
No,
I was pooping blood.
Oh, I couldn't hear you. Okay, go ahead.
I was I was pooping blood. And I went to the hospital and had a 5.1 alcohol level.
Wow. That's outrageous.
And you know what? They released me and I drove home.
I'm sorry for laughing, but I never heard that before. That's wild. Do you remember what year
they
that
released
was?
Me?
I'm curious.
I drove home.
Mm.
That
know,
was.
Do you remember what year?
That would have been 80. That would have been 88.
88. 1988. Yep. All right. I'm surprised that even in 1988 that they allowed that. I used to work in detox centers. That's why.
1988.
I never heard of that before. Holy Christopher.
I left the hospital. I don't know. I was there for about 5 hours, but, you know, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I was released and sent home.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, they've gotten, you know, with the groups that are out there, they've gotten very, very strict about that, and they should be. All right? Because too many people have died. You know. Like the group, what is it, MAD, Mothers Against Drunk Driving or whatever. Groups like that, you know, have their voices have been heard. And they're taken seriously because, you know, their children are dying. Their children are dying. And then also, too, the children who are drinking and driving, they kill people, too, don't they? So that's become something that is acceptable. With the taboo with sexual abuse, it's going to take longer, of course. But we are getting further. But it's taking an awful long time. But these groups that are popping up all over the place, and then people who are writing books, and then the poetry and the music, and all the things that people use to get their voices out there about sexual abuse and, you know, sexual assault, we are being taken more seriously today. And but still, it's not good enough because we still have a ways to go. But here's a platform right here where you've come on and you're telling your story, and people are listening. So, you know, someone's going to listen to what you're saying and think. And maybe you're encouraging that person for them to come on and tell their story because they will be believed and they're helping someone. So I always tell people,
well,
you know.
That's the whole goal.
Sure. Be someone's hero. Yeah.
That's the whole goal, is to try to get people to understand it's okay. And you're not the only one. And that shame and guilt that we held as children or as teenagers doesn't need to be there because it wasn't our fault. And it's okay. Back away from it. Talk to everybody. Let them know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it may hurt. And it's going to hurt a lot in the beginning. But when you get through that beginning, you're going to realize the ease that it's going to bring to your life.
Right. Okay, now we do have a little panel here. I see Beth Donahue from Florida. She's here. Let me see how long she's been listening, because I've been listening very intently to what you're saying here. And see if she has a question or if she wants to make a comment.
Not a problem.
Beth, are you there?
I'm here, yep.
Have you been listening? Have you heard?
How you doing, Beth?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I'm also a sexual abuse survivor by three men as a kid. One of them was my own father also. So, working as an advocate over the years, most people don't tell their parents. Some do. It all depends on what the circumstances are. And I think it usually takes till people are about the age of 40 where they start going through counseling and they actually feel the need to talk to their parents about it. I happen to have been one of the lucky ones and a little bit earlier on, I wrote a letter to my father and myself and my brother went and we gave him the letter and basically confronted him about what he had done to all of us. And I thought that it would have made me feel better. But he acknowledged it and he cried and told us he was sorry. And that made me feel even worse seeing him cry, because of the love-hate line that's there. And, you know, you're supposed to respect your parents, and it's supposed to, you're supposed to love your parents. You know, that's the way I was taught as a Catholic. And it just, but I'm glad today that I got to do that. People that don't get to do that, they harbor that and they hold that. You know, they don't get to push it back to the person that did it to them, take the onus off of themselves and put it back on the person that actually did it to them. And I think that's really important in the healing process, being able to do that. And that's something that I recommend when someone's going through counseling, is they actually, when they're at the point and they're ready to do that, because most people, as a sexual abuse victim, they want to punch the person, usually. You know, it's they want to do some type of damage back to the person. So once you're over the anger stage of it, then actually go and you know, write a letter is probably the best way to do it and try and do that while the person is still alive. And that way there you can take the onus and you can heal. You can put it on the person who did it to you. And it's important. It's important to heal, and it's important to heal early. And that's why the groups that are out there today are so important for kids to get in, and, you know, whether you're a teenager in 20s, 30s, 40s, you know, whatever the age is, to heal so that you can live a normal life. And it's the shame of sexual abuse is it's long term. And, you know, along comes with it the PTSD, and getting past that, getting, you know, doing the self-mutilation, you know, of the drugs and, you know, the alcohol, and going through counseling is probably the best medicine to understand, you know, that you're doing to yourself at this point. You need to get past that and learn to live, you know. And the hardest part, I think, about sexual abuse is the fact that how could somebody do that to you as a child? Why would an adult ever want to do that to a kid? You know, a lot of people think that it's sexual. It's not. It's about power. And to me, you know, either one of them, whether it's sexual or power, why somebody would want to try and overpower a child, because a child's going to love you unconditionally. So to try and do that, I think there's outside influences that also feed into sexual abuse, but still, the person that's doing it is, you know, they're twisted. They really are. There's just no other explanation for someone to do that to a kid. And trying to understand why a parent or an uncle, somebody that's your own family, why they would do that to you, and the other demented things that go along with it, with the physical abuse and, you know, psychological abuse, you know, I'm trying to understand that there is no understanding. And trying, and I know through counseling, a lot of people, you know, say why, and there is no why. It's just the person is just sick, and it's trying to understand that is really, really difficult. And I think that's the crux with a lot of people is, you know, why me? Why did it happen to me? Why did it happen to me multiple times? You know, and that's where the guilt comes from. You know, must have been something that I was doing that caused it. No, as a child, no child ever causes anything like that. It's the adult that you need to put the onus back on. And that is critical in healing and getting past the abuse.
That's exactly right. And you're right.
I'd like to comment on that if you have a minute.
Yeah, go ahead, please do.
You know, when you talk about the anger, when you start to realize this and you want that revenge factor, you know, you're so true in that. Because I had to go, I actually went and turned my guns in because the person that abused me, I was going to go kill.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I knew he was still alive. And I went and turned my guns in and then went back to my psychiatrist and said, we've got to get through this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and, you know, the healing process is not simple. Believe me, and, you know it. It's not simple.
No, it's not. It takes years. And it's not, it gets a lot better sooner, but it takes a lot of years to get through all of it because it's very complex. And like I said, I think the hardest part is understanding how an adult can do that to you as a child. You know, there's just no rhyme or reason for it. They're twisted. And I do believe there are outside influences. I'm not going to talk about that tonight, but there definitely are outside influences that do feed into it. And it's sad because nobody should ever go through anything like that. And parents really need to know what it's all about, you know, whether it's in their family or not. It can happen to any kid. And it has to be exposed. And I live in Florida, and fortunately, the laws here are pretty good. But it took, you know, heinous acts on kids for those laws to come into fruition and be passed into law. And it just, Florida is a transient state, so that's why I think more so that here, you know, they have zero tolerance for anybody hurting a kid. And so it's unfortunate in that way to be part of that. I was molested in Massachusetts, and I'm trying in Massachusetts. I testify when there's laws that come up, and I give them my testimony to make them understand, you know, that there should be zero tolerance, just like here in Florida. But they move the age up, you know, each time, but they will not, for some reason, you know, for like the statute of limitations here in Florida, it's zero. They have no tolerance whatsoever. And Massachusetts, we're trying to do the same thing, but they give it like 5 or 10 years each time it goes in front of the committee, and they pass it into law. They just can't understand, which that also I don't understand, is how a legislator could put limits on someone that was abused that badly. No one should ever touch a kid. And how they can put limits on prosecuting somebody who has done that multiple times, and when it's incest like that, it's generational, that the pedophile, you know, will do it to the first generation, second generation, third generation, and the law should be passed so that no matter how old the victim is or the survivor, they can go and they can prosecute. And trying to explain that in a legislative session each year that it changes is the most difficult thing, you know, because these people have kids. And it's like you want to just say, what if someone did that to your child? How would you feel if there was no law for your child to be able to prosecute the person that did that? And we basically said that to them, but they still do not comprehend that nobody should ever be molested or raped, and there should be no time frame on it to be able to prosecute. And I think in their heads that if someone's 70 or 80 years old, you know, that they can't do it anymore, well, that's not true. As long as they have hands, they can do it. And they should be behind bars. They should never, ever be let out of jail. And it's trying to get legislators to understand that is the hardest thing in the world. Thankfully, here in Florida, they do comprehend it. But it took a lot of people to come forward and a lot of testimony for them to change the laws the way that they're supposed to be. But other states are so difficult. I'll never understand. And I heard you talking about the Boy Scouts. There was someone that I knew that was instrumental in getting all of that exposed. And it was the best thing that ever happened. I mean, each one of these organizations that are involved with children, they should be exposed. They should never, ever be allowed to hurt a child. And every adult that has a child, and even if you don't have a child, you know, you wouldn't want it happening to you. You wouldn't want it happening to your niece or your nephew or your children or anybody. So why do they not understand that it's not okay to do? It's a mentality that needs to be changed, that kids are a gift and you never, ever harm them. So that's what we need to really push, is changing the mentality of the government in order to get these laws passed. And I don't know how you do that. I really don't. I mean, I've been trying for 30 years, and it still is one of the most difficult things to do.
It's very disheartening.
Oh, no.
Okay.
Well, Louisiana.
Because let me tell you, hold on a second there. It's very, very unfortunate because so many people do try, okay, they do try, you know, by doing all different kinds of things, going on TV shows, having presentations,
mm-hmm.
you know, all kinds
yeah.
of things that we do. And still in all, there are some states that just, you can't, they just seem not to care, Beth. They just don't
mm-hmm.
care, okay?
Isn't it
so
amazing?
You feel like, yeah, it's more than amazing. It's disgusting.
Exactly.
Right? If I were to tell you how many times I'd been sexually abused, you'd go barf someplace because that's
mm-hmm.
the truth. And still it doesn't matter. And the one time that it did go to court with me, I was one of 14 girls. I was number 14. And it was at a schoolyard. We were being washed in the courtyard. I was in Staten Island because I used to go to school there. And this nut followed my city bus home. He found out where I lived, and he grabbed me. Okay, I was number 14. And
wow.
let me tell you something. He was about ready to grab number 15. And a teenager, because it was in the newspapers in those days, but they didn't leave your names out there. Everybody knew about it, okay? That was very embarrassing in school. But anyway, he wrote down the license plate number. I knew the guy's car was blue. I knew what he looked like. And I knew it was a Plymouth because in those days they put the name of the car right on the dashboard. Right? It said Plymouth. But I didn't think about getting his plate number. I had just been terribly raped and I was a mess. So the point is this, when he was finally taken to court, 14 girls, okay, 14, and he only got 3.5 years. The courtroom
wow.
in New York, yes, the courtroom in New York was filled with people. It was in all the newspapers. It was a big deal, and it is a big deal. One is a big deal. 14 was ridiculous. So, okay, 14 girls, we all had to stand there watching this monster getting sentenced. And the whole courtroom, it's almost like they all did it in unison. They stood up and they screamed at the judge, "He deserves life. He deserves life." They were all shouting it, "He deserves life." And, of course, he did. Okay?
Absolutely.
So his wife...
How would you like to be sitting in a courtroom?
Court. Well, let me finish because you're going to get even madder. His wife was petitioning the court and pleading poverty. He did a year and a half.
Wow.
A year and a half. All right.
That
how would you
amazing.
Like to be sitting in a courtroom?
Yeah.
And have
it was.
50 priests show up
mm-hmm.
when you're 12 years old, fixing to testify, and have the case dropped, and have the man go back out and rape 22 other kids.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, see, that's amazing with the Catholic Church that they even, I mean, it's getting a little bit better. I mean, the Pope had some victims.
It's not.
Come to the Vatican and actually talk to them, and they have changed some of what they've done. But it's still, it's a long way from what it should have been. Have you ever seen the movie Spotlight?
No, I haven't.
Yes.
Mm-mm.
With the Catholic priests and the Boston Globe opened it up about the priests raping kids.
I'm friends with him.
Friends with who?
The priest who wrote that story.
Okay. Yeah, no, Father Porter was the one that they actually started convicting. And there was a fellow in Boston that had tried to take it to the Catholic Church in Boston, and nobody believed him. He's like you. He got shut down. And the Boston Globe ran with the story finally after Father Porter was exposed, and they had moved him around, I think, to 5 different churches. And at that point in time, they created the database of the priests that had molested the kids, and they actually pinpointed how they moved them from one church to the other, and they have a database of it. And mm-hmm. I'll tell you something, that's how they started prosecuting all the other priests. And it's just, it's crazy, absolutely crazy to think that all of these men, you know, got away with doing this stuff. It just, it blows your mind to think that it was hidden so well.
Well, Beth, we know because we all work with it. A pedophile, even if he's considered to be a first-time, you know, offender, he got caught for the first time. So that's what that means, really. You have your tier ones, twos, and threes. You have your tier ones, twos, and threes, right? Now, we don't know exactly how many kids got, you know, assaulted by this man who had me. We knew of 14.
Right.
But, you know, they've done studies on this, and you know this. They've done studies on this, and it can be anywhere from 121 to 128. They don't seem to know the exact number. You know, and that can be 10 times with one kid, 15 times with another kid, 5 times with one, you know what I'm saying? Do the math yourself. So think of these priests that get away with it for all these many, 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 many years. And, you know, it's just totally, totally outrageous. And you're right about the age, because let me tell you something. I was outside protesting in the town of... What was that? Did he say? I couldn't hear what he said.
I've got an emergency call I have to take.
Okay, go ahead. I'll talk to Beth. The show's almost over anyway. But, this maniac that worked with detention, all right, he wasn't a judge, but he was like the sheriff or whatever. And, he had been going into detention and taking out boys year after year after year. He'd take one at a time. He'd give them candy, all right? And he'd take them over to his office, and he was raping them. And they kept their mouths shut because, like you said, and this is very true, we all know this, that, you know, by the time they're 30, 40, somewhere in there, they come out and finally tell. I received an email. And quite frankly, the email was asking for help because they were going to finally, this man at the age of 84 by this time, still alive, they wanted him to go to jail. Well, of course, I wish they'd come out sooner, all right? So, but anyway, long story short, the man, we had him in Hunterdon County. And what's her name was down there too. She works for the statute of limitations. She was there also, but they decided not to hold it there and to go to another courtroom out of town because it was like a zoo. The cars were going around and around and around the courthouse. It was, you know, it was getting a lot of attention. Okay, so finally the court date for the second time came up, and he died. So he never spent a day, not one day, in jail. But we were out there protesting.
And that's hard because you know you want the person dead, but you want them to suffer. So it's and you know. You know it's wrong to want someone to suffer, but you still can't help feeling that way because of the suffering that they made you go through and made you feel. And,
sure.
I mean, I used to lay in bed as a kid, and I would think of all kinds of different ways to kill my father. I would lay there, and I thought of, you know, different ways to, you know, to just stop my suffering from what he was doing to me and to my brothers. And I would lay there and I would just think about ways that I could just make it so it would stop, you know. And it's that's so abnormal for a kid to ever have to think that way, you know. And it's and I look at the kids that get bullied. I mean, they feel the same way too. And that's not about like a teacher. That's about another kid, you know. That's what I equate that to. It's anybody that's terrorized and tortured. You know, you're gonna. That's very normal for a child to want it to stop, and to it gets to a certain point where it's then you start thinking violence, and I just, I mean, it's normal for a child that's going through that type of trauma, no matter what it is, to feel that way against the perpetrator. That's why one of the things that they were doing over in Pasco County over here in Florida, there's a sheriff that's over there. His name is Naco, Sheriff Naco. He literally had a predictive system. He signed up with the school system that the kids' names that got like C, D, and F grades and that had any type of like background that you know, they may be a troubled child. Now, this went early years, and they actually took the school records and put them into the police database. That was something that just, I mean, we've crossed over some serious lines when we can do that to kids. I mean, that's just, you know, kids' lives, you don't know what somebody's home life is. You know, so instead of taking a kid and putting his information into a police database, why don't you go and find out what the hell's going on with the kid, what the parents are doing to this kid, and put their names in a police database, not the child's, you know, and have that kid go through counseling and let him them know that what's happening to them is very abnormal, and teaching them through counseling that what's happening to them is wrong. Not by sticking their name in a police database. So, you know, through the years, and then they're 18, and all they already have a rap sheet based on getting a D or an F in school because they had a crappy upbringing. You know, we've gone so backwards with everything. You know, we've become such a almost like a communist country with some of the things that we're doing.
Yeah, that's what it's turning into. Yes.
Yeah, it's awful. I mean, you don't go after kids. You go after the perpetrators that are doing this stuff to the kids. You know, and you put those parents' information in that database, not the children's. You know, and it's just, and I know part of the reason why they thought that was okay to do is because of school shootings, you know, and that's not okay either. You know, it's you know, you can't, there's so much of it going on all levels, you know, and kids that are being abused in the house, I mean, they need to step in. Thank God, like the court reporters. You know, there's so many people now that are considered that they have to report it, you know, if they see anything. And that's changed, and that's a good thing. But you need to treat it the right way. You can't just, you know, take kids' names and all of their and profile them, you know, and take their history and stick that into a police database. That's just flat-ass wrong. You know, and then thankfully it's going to court. And they'll probably reverse it, thank God. You know, and then they'll make them, you know, erase the database and stuff. But that just, you know, that's overstepping, you know, by the government that, you know, that's as bad as the goddamn Pope, you know, allowing, the priest's record to be, you know, sealed and not, you know, acknowledging what's going on and going after the priests. You know, it's, you know, and they're going after the victims and the survivors. That's what the police are doing. Instead of going after the parents, they're going after the kids. You know, what the hell kind of crap is that? Kids are innocent. And this country needs to realize you don't go after a child. You go after an adult. And they need to figure it out on how to do that. And you leave kids the hell alone.
Well, yeah, I agree with you 100%. And, but, you know, we have to get people to want to care enough, though. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
We've been doing this for so many years, right? You and I both, all right? And I'm certainly not going to give up, whether I'm here,
no, you can't,
or whether I'm working somewhere else or whatever, okay?
Right.
The point of the whole thing is I'll do it till the day I die. Plus, I'll work with the homeless because I was out on the street at one point.
Right,
so,
right.
That's another passion of mine. But the point is this, that when children are innocent and when we're mistreated like that, it affects us physically, mentally, emotionally, psychologically, and
exactly.
You know, all the ways that it can affect you. And, you know,
right.
They talk about kids out on the street, you know, committing crimes. Now, I'm not for kids doing that. Believe me, I ended up working in a detention center. I worked a lot of places, Beth, because I had to make money. I had two children to take care of. My first husband was a nut. I didn't put that part in before. But I had to leave. So whatever organization paid more is where I worked. Let's put it this way. But I learned a lot. And I know the good, the bad, and the ugly. And let me tell you, I was so filled with panic all my life because
mm-hmm.
that's all I ever knew was violence.
Right, right,
and
you know,
we
exactly.
tend to gravitate towards jobs that we know we're going to feel comfortable at.
Right,
like, what
right.
did I just say? A detention, a Rahway Life
right.
program, Scared Straight, as a part of that.
Right, right.
After that, detox centers, all right? Psychiatric. I was a state certified
yep.
technician. But, you see, I felt like I'd know how. I didn't have to, you know too much more than what I already know because I'd already been there.
You know? Right. You attract what's comfortable, whether it's a job or whether it's a partner. And that,
right.
I'll tell you something, I did that prior to getting counseling. I went with what I felt comfortable with, you know, and if it was something that was outside of that, alcohol, you know, and just abuse, you know, and if it was anything outside of that, I ran the other way. It scared me
right.
to death. Oh, my God. Oh, my God, he's normal. I mean,
Isn't that true?
Yeah. Today it's a lot different. But, I mean, back then, you know, it was that's what you were used to. You know, you were used to, you know, I had a lot of alcohol in my family. And you know, just it's crazy. You know, you go with what you know. And that's what I knew, you know, was the alcohol. But I'll tell you something, I have learned so much over the years, I really have, and I'm still seeing the abuse, you know, it's I still get targeted by pedophiles. They know that I'm a survivor, they know that I'm an advocate, and I get attacked by them, and they use different ways to do it. It's not just verbal anymore. They have other ways, such as, like, have you ever heard of, there's different things, and I was actually just watching a program on it. It was pretty interesting. They use what's called remote viewing, and it's actually, they can do that. It's almost like a mind-to-mind where they can start it in Russia. And I think that's how they do some of the sex trafficking also. And I'm learning more and more about it. And I think that's how they're able to get away with it the way that they do.
I've heard of it. I don't know too much about it. But if you find out more, let us know. Share it.
Yeah, I will.
Because
I will.
This is
I
what we'll have to do.
Will. Right.
Yes. It's,
yeah.
It's a pleasure to have you on.
We are each other's knowledge, and
exactly.
and you know, telling each other what's going on and updating each other is the best thing we can do for each other to help kids.
If we stand together, we will get much further than if we don't, okay?
Right, exactly.
And that's
exactly.
just the way it is. And it's going to be we, the survivors, who are going to make the difference.
Right, right, exactly.
Now,
victims normally can't until they transfer
yeah.
over to survivorship.
I have to end the show. But I'm so glad you
okay.
came on, Beth. I wish you'd come on more, for heaven's sake. You
yeah,
certainly
I
have
will.
So much knowledge.
I will. Yeah,
that'd
I saw,
be very good.
Yeah, I saw Bill's message today, so I figured I'd pop in and see what was going on.
Oh,
good,
you did.
So.
Yeah.
Okay,
so thank you so much for that. I have to end. Oops.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you again, and please do come back, okay? Okay.
You're welcome. You're welcome, and thank you. And I'll talk to you
thank
soon.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
Right, bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Another tomorrow, 'cause that dawn was